Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
TalkSport is taking its football coverage to new levels in 2019-20 with Game Day on Saturdays, bringing you three live and exclusive Premier League commentaries hosted by Reshmin Chowdhury, Adrian Durham and Laura Woods, and with commentary from me, Sam Matterface, Nigel Adley and Clive Tilsley. This season is going to be our biggest yet. And to make sure that you're fully prepped, we decided to bring you the only Premier League podcast that is going to give you in-depth analysis of all 10 games each week. I'm joined by a cast of serious football thinkers and Tom Rennie, the TalkSport International Editor. All right, Tom.
Thanks, mate.
Each week, we're going to bring you the Game Day Preview podcast. You can subscribe right now via iTunes, Acast, Spotify, the works, and we would absolutely love you for it as well. We also want you to help us make this even better week by week, so just tweet us your thoughts if you've got anything we want to hear from you, at Sam Matterface on Twitter if you want to get involved. This week, we've got a man who has played for Feyenoord, for Watford, Wolves, Wimbledon, West Ham, Leicester, Wigan, Sunderland, Saints, Pompey and Oxford, and most importantly, a striker who has played in the World Cup last 16. He's played for Ireland. It's Dr. David Connolly in the building, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, well, I mean, if your side has a problem, I can diagnose it and prescribe the medication.
That's what we're hoping for. Right, this podcast is about one thing, football matches, and how you can be fully briefed ahead of the weekend. And we kick off with an absolute corker.
Know how fine the margins are in football. If you get too up when you do well, or if you get too down when you, it's a mental game, it's all in the head, and we didn't handle the ups and the downs well enough. We know that it might be down to, as I said before, mental tiredness, because I think it was a draining season for everyone.
Cuts it back, then Conte, brilliant once again from you-know-who, Eden Hazard, and N'Golo Conte says thanks very much.
The opportunity to manage, having played here, having felt the club, to manage this place, this club, these fans, these players, was huge.
Pogba's there, taps it into the Stretford end, and it's 3-1 for Manchester United. Pogba, oh yeah, baby.
Game Day Podcasts from TalkSport. Premier League Preview Show.
What a way to start as well. Two sides that used to fight in their respective gaffer's day for a title, but now they're just clambering for a place in the top four. No doubting the story of the match, though, the United boss, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, welcoming along Frank Lampard, his first game as a Premier League manager. I think it's really intriguing, actually, that people were so down on these two guys, that they're multiple trophy winners, serious professionals as players. I'm well aware, obviously, that the experience is limited in the dugout, but if you think that these two guys, who eked every single ounce of potential out of their playing careers, are coming in for a bit of fun and a knockabout and haven't thought about their plan seriously, you're the one that's naive, not them.
They had a disastrous, we know that, last seven games. However, the signing of Maguire, I think, is really important. Wan-Bissaka will have an impact. Now, if they can cut their goals against, if they can keep their goals for similar to what they had last season, which I think they will, they are going to be there or thereabouts. So they'll have enough. I think they're going to have more than enough with Martial through the middle, Rashford out wide, to trouble this Chelsea defence. I really do. There's talk that maybe, I don't know who's going to play at the back, whether Luiz is going to be fit. Obviously, there's doubts about Rudiger.
Oh, so Rudiger won't play then.
That's
he's
right.
their best defender.
Yeah, that's right. So there's a few chinks in their armour, and I think Chelsea and Frank Lampard are still finding their feet. They weren't particularly great against Borussia Mönchengladbach in their last pre-season game. Symptomatic of, at times, last season. Started slowly, they were 2-0 down, could have been even worse. In the end, they came good. Now, I'm not saying they're going to play like that here, but obviously they're going to Old Trafford, which would be tough for them. And I think, actually, this is going to be a really difficult game because I think United, certainly at the back of tightening things up, they've got, I think, one of the best goalkeepers who can do everything you want a goalkeeper to do. And I'm not sure, for example, that Kepa is that keeper. He's already shown pre-season. He's not great at playing out. I'm not sure he can play the way Frank wants to play. So this will be interesting.
There'll be at least five changes from the team that faced Chelsea in April. I think they'll press a lot higher up the pitch, but they'll get pressed as well. They've got a lot more energy in this Manchester United team than they had last season. But I don't know if you saw the AC Milan game in pre-season. Did you see it when they were trying to play out from the back and Milan squeezed up and they scored from that? Maybe that's a recipe for success for Chelsea. The worry area for me for Manchester United is actually in midfield. They play 4-2-3-1 in there, and Matic is likely to start. Now, I spoke to him last week. I went to see up at Carrington, and he told me this.
So this is my pre-season, I think, after 3 years. I feel better, of course. It's different when you do pre-season and when you start the league without any training, like I did last 2 years. So,
do you think that affected your form?
Of course, of course. Last season, I had, as you know, I had a surgery. Mm. Then I start to play games with just few trainings. Easy light sessions, so you don't feel in the beginning that, but in December, January,
it's, when it's cold,
yeah, it's hard. So me personally, I feel much better physically, stronger. So hopefully this season we can do much better than last season.
I've got a question for you: McTominay and Matic or Pogba? McTominay and Pogba. Which the combination that you would choose?
Yeah, I mean, look, he did struggle McTominay without Pogba beside him. So unless Pogba's fit, I think they are going to struggle in there. So Matic not mobile enough. We know that. Yeah. Fingers crossed for United fans. They'd want obviously Pog and McTominay in there. I got a feeling, though, the key player for here, and he played well against Chelsea 3 times last season, is Wan-Mata. Mm. As long as he's fit and he's in there, that chief creator, they'll have a chance. And they've certainly got the players to hurt this Chelsea side. They really do.
What's the combination in midfield for you?
Pogba and someone. We know it's going to be Pogba and somebody in there. The players listed. Look, I know you spoke to Nemanja Matic and he blamed injuries. I think his form tailed off even before Manchester United bought him. A brief flourish when they first bought him doesn't make him the player he was 4 or 5 years ago. I think he needed replacing. Herrera's a massive loss as well. If he was still at the club, I think I would have started him in this game. I like Scott McTominay. I really, really do. I want him to play football. And I think it'll be interesting if he does start this weekend. That's going to be such a vote of confidence for someone who's so young and so talented to start in that midfield. I would like to see it being McTominay and someone for the first 4, 5, 6 weeks, certainly for this game. And look, they're building this team around Pogba again. We know that's a failure. We know it's not going to work. So I think a bold call would be McTominay, maybe Matic, defensive pairing, and move Pogba further forward or get rid of him entirely. They don't want him. They don't want to build a team around him. So why play him?
My response to that is that I don't think Chelsea have the players where United need to hold in midfield players. I don't think they do. So obviously we know Hazard's gone. There's still question marks. Kante might not be fit. He's only played 20 odd minutes, hasn't he? I'm not sure that really they're going to cause as many problems or pose as many problems. Hudson-Odoi's out. We know Pulisic has been in good form, but who are they going to play as a number nine? A mobile number nine, it looks like Tammy Abraham, or Giroud as the big target man. Either way,
can't stop Giroud.
I'm not sure they need two holding midfield players against Chelsea. Certainly not at home. And first game of the season at Old Trafford.
Chelsea's biggest issue is going to be goals. Abraham gets the nod at number nine. We know he's got the shirt. Barkley's played more minutes than anybody else in pre-season. Scored pens galore, and it's got to be a big season for him. I just can't see how you get him and Mason Mount into the same team. Pedro's going to be a big player for Chelsea this year, no doubt about it. He and Pulisic are going to have to chip in right from the very start, hit the ground running. Pulisic in particular, with goals, because finding the 16 Premier League goals and the 15 assists left behind by Eden Hazard is like searching for the wee Belgian in the gym. Difficult to find.
It is. And at times last season, obviously, they had no number nine. They were playing with Hazard as the number nine. He didn't want to be the number nine. So they still haven't solved that problem. Look, if Tammy is the man, the main man, we'll have to wait and see. I think he probably will get the nod, but I don't think he will necessarily cause him as many troubles as a big Giroud would. So interesting who gets that nod at number nine.
You love Tammy though, don't you? You're a big fan of him, have been for a while.
I am, but I think it's just a really big call at Old Trafford. If it was me, I'd be going with Giroud and I'd be playing to his strengths, getting the ball wide, getting it in the box, causing the likes of Lindelof, who I think struggle with aerial challenge, getting the ball into him in the box.
Top stats for you. Chelsea haven't won at Old Trafford despite United's recent issues since 2013. When Matt got the goal actually for Chelsea in the 87th minute that day. They won by a goal to nil. Big team news headlines. Baye definitely out. Doubts persist over Pereira and Pogba, actually, who pulled out of a pre-season friendly last weekend. Top Chelsea stories here. They will be better when they have Rudiger, Ruben Loftus-Cheek, Callum Hudson-Odoi both back. Callum's back round about early September. Rudiger, late September. Ruben Loftus-Cheek, we're talking probably December. I do want to see Reece James in that squad, but probably not until the autumn, I wouldn't have thought. Now, this season, Tom, me and our esteemed pro will lock down our predictions for the three biggest matches of the weekend. And we'll do that after we've looked at Liverpool and Norwich and West Ham and Manchester City. By the way, I want you to tweet us your predictions of those big three games as well at Sam Matterface, and we will give you the ultimate praise on this programme to the listening millions should you get it right next week. Right, let's crack on.
Sterling, who shoots it underneath the goalkeeper, and Alisson's made a fumble and it's squirmed behind him and it's into the net, and Manchester City are off to a flying start in 2019-20.
Van Dijk towards the head of Matip, who beautifully heads the ball past Claudio Bravo and into the back of the net. Henderson's ball to the far post. Van Dijk with the header across goal. Steps up, stutters, right-footed, slams it past the despairing dive of his compatriot. And Manchester City win the FA Community Shield on penalties against their arch-rivals Liverpool.
I'll be commentating on the champions against West Ham for game day on TalkSport 12:30 Saturday. Tom Rennie, what's the story?
Now, I am a West Ham fan. You know that. I feel happy coming clean about that. But I am so gutted that we've got Man City on the opening weekend of the season, because watching West Ham play Man City over the last 4 or 5 years reminds me of that feeling many of our listeners will know. When you've had a heavy weekend, you wake up, you're in Magaluf on your stag weekend with your pals, and all you want is a lovely bacon sandwich, and all there is in the apartment is the Sambuca from last night. And someone puts that Sambuca in front of you and you think, oh God, get it away from me. That is how I feel about this fixture every time it comes around. Even in the Asia Cup, they smash West Ham for 4. So I expect that to happen once again in this game. Look, I think West Ham this year, I'm optimistic. That is not in my nature. I like the look of Allaire up front. I think he's got all the attributes that Arnautovic had without the horrendous attitude. Fornals looks good. Lanzini I love, but he's got to stay fit for the first time in his West Ham career. And Felipe Anderson too. The trouble is, Pellegrini is going to play all 4 of those against a Manchester City side that we know is absolute world class. They've got so many options going forward. I love the look of Raheem Sterling in that central role. I know it was maybe just for the Community Shield and a bit of pre-season, but I'd like to see him do that a bit more. I think he looks absolutely fantastic in that position. The only issue for City going forward is defence. And I wonder who you guys think is going to be playing for the majority of this season in those central defensive roles. Laporte's probably out this weekend, so we're looking at Stones and Otamendi. No one has come in to fill that company role. So what is the strongest pairing that we're going to see?
Well, I think the big issue, I think, for West Ham is their goalkeeper going to be fit? Yeah. Fabianski's out. They've only got David Martin, who I saw concede a real blunder at the Den, and Roberto.
Yeah.
And that is a big call against the champions at who had scored goals for fun and got the most fearsome front line in the whole of Europe. So, big concerns. If I was City, I'd be thinking, right, where's West Ham's weaknesses? Well, you might say they've got quite a few at the back, but certainly I think in the full-back areas, and especially maybe in the left-back area. So I'll be thinking, right, Raheem Sterling, out him, get him Raheem Sterling working out wide. And if I was West Ham, I'd be thinking, right, where's City's weak link? Also, I think it's in fullback areas, and that might be Zinchenko.
Well, the way that they play in the Community Shield with Sterling up front and Sane on one side and Bernardo on the other, I don't think they'll play like that when it comes to the Premier League, because Aguero would have had another 10 days worth of training, and
Sane's injured probably.
Knocking on the shoulder. Well,
is he injured? Yeah.
Is he trying to get out? I don't know. But Sterling, I think, much more effective when he's playing on the wing. He's definitely not a full-time striker for me. You saw that when he was going through the middle one-on-one face with Alisson and crumpled in a heap. He's been brilliant, and they've worked so hard with him goal scoring wise. They've been doing that this summer as well. They know what they want to achieve with him, but he's better and more effective when he's arriving later in the box and from a wide position.
Absolutely.
He's absolutely vital to their success, Raheem Sterling, and I think he will be. The one where you talked about the defensive issues that Manchester City might well have, they only conceded one more goal than Liverpool last campaign. They've added Rodri to their midfield to stiffen that up when Fernandinho isn't quite available for them. But I do worry about the fact they've only got three real centre-backs, haven't they, really? Out-and-out centre-backs. Laporte will be first choice every week when he is fit. But when he's not, it is Otamendi who steps in his place. And I'm not necessarily sure that he is as good as Manchester City would want and need. They've also got a bit of an issue at left-back. They've signed Angelino, who they bought back from their youth team. He went to PSV. They executed the buyback clause. He's a good left-back. But they've been using Zinchenko in that area. And if it was me, if there's one area in which West Ham can flourish, it's attacking him, because I thought he looked a little bit shaky against Liverpool.
He certainly did. And if you saw the Community Shield, I mean, when they were playing out with Bravo, it was always to Otamendi. And I'd be thinking, OK, that's fine. You go and do that. And if I was West Ham, I'd be trying to press them. Now, the only problem is, with this new goalkeeper law, and I saw City do this so many times live last season, if you go and press them high, they make the pitch so big. And especially with this new law, once they get through you, that is it.
It's the Guardiola law, isn't it? That's what it should be called. They've changed this. They've changed the rules of the game itself to accommodate the way Pep Guardiola plays football.
Yeah, and that's going to be the challenge for West Ham. Do they go and press high? Do they sit off? I don't think really they've got the players to go and win it up high, because I think they're going to leave themselves exposed. But we'll have to wait and see. And certainly I'll be looking at getting that Zinchenko. I'll be playing someone who's not really first choice. It might be someone like Mikel Antonio, whether he comes on, I don't know. He's got that physical power. He's brilliant at the back post. How many times have we seen attack balls that are hung up to the back post using his physical power? And I know Mikel, because I played with him at Southampton. He's come on leaps and bounds. Look, we know Fornals is probably going to get the nod, but he's a little bit similar in size to Zinchenko physically. And I don't think that's really how you're going to get at him. You need to test him. But you saw him at the back, really poor header, wasn't there, in the Community Shield. He didn't really know where he was. He got his bearings all wrong, Zinchenko. If it's me, I'll put someone tall, physical, powerful, someone like Mikel Antonio up against him.
They've got some good forward players coming back as well. I mean, Yarmolenko was missing for most of last season. Him coming back into the squad is really important, because he's not only a very good winger, he's also quite a big physical specimen as well. Friday night, the season opener sees Liverpool take on Norwich. David, are these two clubs you didn't play for?
Yes.
He loves that joke. He loves that one.
This guy's an
expert.
Old
ones are the best. There we go.
Look, this guy's an expert analyst, probably because he's played for pretty much every club in the league. So when he tells you what's going to happen, take note. Dr. David Connolly
is here. And I was paid as an analyst by a club, so there you go.
Take it away. What's going to happen between Liverpool and Norwich?
Well, this is a really interesting game, because obviously, you know, the two managers, they didn't work together at Dortmund, but they kind of just didn't quite overlap. But they've got similar beliefs, similar philosophies, and Daniel Fart doesn't do anything really different to Jurgen Klopp. I think he's just got maybe less players, less ability, less good players. Players aren't quite at that level of a Liverpool, but they play a similar way. They blew the Championship away. But actually, they conceded as many goals as Forest and Stoke. A lot of them from set pieces, something like 17. And 20% of goals in the Premier League are scored from set pieces. So they have got vulnerabilities. They barely spent any money. $750,000 on Sam Bryan. And I think last season they had a $5 million gross spend. So we know, right, they are what they are. This is them. They are the Wolves now going up. But I don't think they're going to be as good. They concede far too many. They're not going to have enough to stop this Liverpool slide, which is slowly just evolving. No great additions, you know, just a little sprinkling of youthful talent. How do they approach this game? Well, I tell you what, how they played last season, Norris, they went and tried to win the ball up high and press and win the ball high back, a bit like the heavy metal sort of football that Jurgen Klopp's associated with. But he can't do that against Liverpool. They're just going to get through them.
But Liverpool looks a little bit behind, actually, in terms of their pre-season fitness and concentration.
I thought they came on strong.
In the second half, they did.
Exactly.
But in the second half, when they played the first-choice defence, and actually when they had most of their first-choice players on the pitch, because actually I think they got better and better as they started to make their substitution in the second half, they actually looked a little bit out of tune, especially that back four. And I just wonder whether or not Norwich might benefit from going there earlier in the season rather than later when everything's all sorted.
I think if they get their nose, if they come away here with anything like a nil-nil or a low defeat,
hey, ain't going to be nil-nil.
It's going to be a bonus for them. So if I was them, I'd be trying to keep the score down as much as I can, because one thing you want to do when you go into Premier League, you don't want to get heavily beaten in that first game, you know. And they are going to be coming up against the toughest possible opponent that you could come up against.
But you said it, Daniel Farker isn't the kind of manager, Farker, who's going to go out there and put like five at the back, four in midfield, lump it forward, work the channels. That is not what they're going to do. That's not what they did last year, and he's not going to change that. I don't want to say philosophy.
Yeah, but we will see, because, you know, look, going back to Frank Lampard, he played a certain way when he first took over. First game for Derby, tried to play out a beautiful game against Reading, nearly got cost him. Mm. Played again the second game against Leeds, lost 4-0. He quickly changed. Now, I'm not saying Daniel Farker is going to be like that, but if he tries to be bold and brave against the size of Liverpool, look, he would have seen the likes of Liverpool, Man City. He ripped teams apart. He knows that he can't do that, and he will know that he conceded enough goals to be seventh in the Championship.
Does a thrashing do him a favour? If they lose 8-0 to Liverpool on Friday Night Football, do you think there's a chance that they might learn more from that than a dogged 0-0 draw?
They're not going to lose 8-0.
Well,
why also,
not? Well, they're not going to lose 8-0 because they'll probably score a goal.
8-1. We'll take 8-1.
I don't think that one. When we look at the Premier League's opening days, a lot of goals are scored on opening night because people were still not at full tilt. And Liverpool have been involved in some really high scoring opening weeks of the season, though, historically, and go back to the Arsenal game a couple of seasons ago. However, this is a team that in Norwich that have been preparing for this day and this day only for the last 6 or 7 weeks. Whereas Liverpool actually may well have been thinking about the Community Shield, they may well have been thinking about the Super Cup, they may well be thinking about the game that they've got coming up in the next couple of weeks against Arsenal. There's a lot more to think about with Liverpool. Norwich concentrated on this match and making sure they get through it. I actually think that I think Liverpool will win it. I think there's probably not much doubt of that. There's an 80% chance that Liverpool will come away with all 3 points, but I do think Norwich will get on the score sheet.
You've got to remember, a lot of these players for Liverpool, the likes of Firmino and Salah, played less than 90 in the whole pre-season.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mane, for example, with Africa Cup of Nations. So they are going to be slow starters, and that's fine, you know, because they haven't had this big rest. Now, obviously, Norwich have, but they've got real issues at centre-half. I know Ben Godfrey, terrific talent. He's only 21. Mm. The two young fullbacks are terrific.
But he's a super talent.
But they're only kids.
Yeah.
You're asking an awful lot of this very youthful back four. They've got question marks in the centre of defence. Look, I love Norwich. I thought they're outstanding how they played last season, but the back four and the goalkeeper, whether it's Tim Krul or a new signing from Germany, they've both played the same amount of minutes pre-season, so who that number one is going to be in goal, we don't know. That is an awful challenge for that back four and goalkeeper.
Dermot is not really a goal scorer. They've signed him. No. Pukki, obviously, is he going to make the step up? I mean, Dermot's got 6 goals in 41 for Borussia Mönchengladbach, 6 in 26 for Leverkusen before that, and I don't know whether or not Pukki can score that many goals at this sort of level. Okay, let's lock down our big games of the week.
Matterface. Rennie, Connolly, lock it down.
So Tom, me and whoever is in the pro chair, this week it's David Connolly, is going to pick their result of the three big games this week. We'll start off with Manchester United against Chelsea. These two sides will produce an interesting game, an open game. It's the toughest game of a light start in terms of fixtures for me. The last time the Gaffers went head-to-head was May 2004. They were on the pitch at the time. It finished a draw at Old Trafford, and I'm going for a score draw here.
I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer needs a win on the opening weekend of the season. Frank Lampard, if his team wins, send out a real message. They are a team to be taken seriously this season. I see goals. I see attacking football. I will take a victory for Chelsea.
Ooh.
I think this is going to be a really entertaining game. I think Solskjaer, I think Ollie's going to go for it, play the attacking, free-flowing football that the fans demand up there. I can only see one result here, and that's a home win.
Oh, interesting. Okay, let's move on to West Ham against Manchester City, another game day games. Biggest worry for me is Lucas Fabianski. He's had an injury. Is he in or is he out? Even if he is in the team. He's not 100% fit. I'm panicking for West Ham, who, by the way, have added well going forward, but not in defence where they needed to. City all day long for me. Sorry, Tom.
Yeah, another railing for West Ham at the hands of Man City, I think. I'll take a City win. And luckily, I'm not putting a score in because it would be double figures, I fear.
I can only see an away victory here. I think City, with the steel and the grit that they've shown, even in the Community Shield, I mean, they're here to win it this season. Again, make it three in a row. I think it could be three in a row here. Man City, away win.
Friday night, Liverpool against Norwich City. Liverpool are going to win this game, but Norwich City are going to get on the score sheet. It's going to be a fun game. It's going to be entertaining. There's going to be a lot to talk about from it, but it's a home win.
I have no confidence in a Norwich goal in this game. I have big confidence in a big Liverpool win.
I can only see a Liverpool home victory here. I think that Norwich are going to find it tough. They're going to add to the Premier League, but I'm afraid they're not going to come home with any points here. Home win.
We'll process those results every single week, stick it into a league table, and then at the end of the season, someone will walk away with a fantastic prize.
Ooh!
I wonder what that prize will be. Maybe a packet of cheese and onion crisps or something.
Armenian wine, I think, would be nice.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Saturdays are game day on TalkSport. This weekend and every weekend, we have three games back to back from the Premier League. Our 5:30 this week stars the Champions League finalists.
Christian Eriksen has come up with a crackerjack of a goal. 2 minutes from time to win the game for Tottenham Hotspur.
The full-time whistle has gone.
Michelle Owen from Sky Sports spends her time in the Midlands and the South West. She's a closet Villa fan as well. So let's look ahead to the rebirth of Aston Villa in the Premier League after 3 years away. Michelle, how are you doing?
Yeah, all good. Thank you, Sam. Excited for the season.
You must be very excited about the return of Aston Villa. They've spent a small fortune in the transfer market, but how are they going to play?
Well, Dean Smith in charge sort of only has one way of playing, and that's an attacking style of play. Anyone that saw them in the Championship last year will know they like to go at teams, and really they only recycle the ball when they feel like there's nothing else on. I can't see that changing too much in the Premier League. Yeah, 12 new signings, but they did release 9 players as well. They have spent big, but they needed to bring some players in. They've still got the heart of their midfield, John McGinn and Jack Grealish. They've added quality further forward. It'll be interesting to see how Hotter fares in the Premier League. He's a player that Dean Smith had at Brentford, of course. Defensively, I think they look really good. They've got Tyrone Mings and Courtney Hawes now permanently. They've signed Tom Heaton this week in goal. I do hope Jed Steer gets a chance at some point. But when you look up and down the squad now, the depth looks like it is there to compete in the Premier League.
Tammy Abraham scored 25 goals in the Championship. Where are the goals going to come from this season?
Depends how they play. I'd imagine they'll still play three up top. So they've signed Wesley from Club Bruges. He had a record of 19 goals in 54 appearances for them. So his record's pretty decent. So if Dean Smith plays three up top, I'd expect Wesley through the middle and then Anwar El Ghazi one side like last season, and maybe Hotter will go the other. So they shouldn't struggle too much for goals. Of course, Tammy Abraham is a massive loss, but I think he'll do well for Chelsea this season.
Michelle, you mentioned a couple of players that were fantastic for Villa last season. Everyone loves Jack Grealish, low socks and wonderful hair. McGinn was phenomenal as well, some great goals, such a talented player. The step up to the Premier League from being the outstanding players in the Championship is a tough one. Do you think that they have the ability, the confidence to lead this side to not just survival in the Premier League, but better than that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, Jack Grealish, it's sort of poetic, really, isn't it? He almost went to Spurs. He pretty much waved goodbye, if you remember that goodbye to the Villa fans when he waved. Everyone thought he was going to Spurs. And now the first Premier League game he will play back in the Premier League for Aston Villa is against Spurs. Now, when he came back from injury last season, Villa won 10 games in a row with him. That's how important he was. 6 goals and 7 assists, they're good statistics. But the way he plays, and he's so stylish on the ball. I love the way he plays in midfield, just keeps things ticking over. And then John McGinn, you mentioned there, he's a live wire, he chases everything down, he can finish, he's full of energy. And don't forget as well, they've got Conor Hourihan, who was a key player last season, and they've added Douglas Luiz, who looks like a really good signing. So competition for places in that midfield is going to be really, really difficult for Dean Smith to pick one of them. But for me, Jack Grealish has to start. He's Villa through and through, he's the captain, and he's definitely Premier League quality. He's in my fantasy football team.
They were outstanding for the last few months of the season, no doubt about that. Dean Smith got them clicking beautifully after coming in for Steve Bruce in the early part of the season. David, they've got to deal with Tottenham on the first day of the campaign. At home, Tottenham in their brand new stadium. It's a real baptism of fire, isn't it? But the one positive, I suppose, is there's no Son, there's no Ali, and there's a little bit of confusion about who's going to play at right back for Tottenham.
Yeah, there is, but I think going to Villa Park is going to be a really tough challenge. I mean, you know, on its day, it can be a really intimidating place to play. I think Dean Smith's done a tremendous job. But as you say, he's playing the Spurs side, but they've still got a few question marks over them. Now, if he can gel all those players together, Dean, as he has done previously against a Tottenham side who I think can be slow starters, then I think they've got a real chance here.
What do you think about Tottenham? Who are they going to play at right back?
Well, Wanforth was doing it, wasn't he, before the injury?
He got injured in that Audi Cup. It sort of killed their plans, I think.
But it did seem like he was going to be the starting fullback. I don't know what happened to Serge Aurier. I'm not quite sure why he got bombed out to such a degree. But it's not just injury with him. It seems like they don't fancy him. They didn't fancy Trippier, so he has gone. So you've only got to look at Kyle Walker-Peters. That is it now for senior, potentially for the first 6 months of the season. He has got to play there, or they're going to find someone to do it.
Prior to this podcast going out, I mean, they're talking about Kyle Walker-Peters probably going on loan to Crystal Palace. That has been muted.
I mean, as we know, we don't know as we record whether it's happened, but you cannot let your only actual fullback who's at the club and can play in week one, you can't let him go out. That would be an insane thing to have done.
Well, it would be, but to be honest, I've made a couple of errors, I think. For example, when Dembele left last January and they didn't really have any other cover, they've let Trippier go a little bit too early, obviously banking on maybe, you know, that right-back position being filled, but obviously the injury now, I don't know, I just wonder whether that might come back to haunt them, because really he can't play any other way. He doesn't have rampaging, marauding wing backs anymore necessarily, so I don't think that is one for its position, certainly when obviously if he's injured. No. So I think he's got it all to do, certainly at the back. So there'll be hope, I think, here for Villa.
Well, if you want a little bit of an omen for the Spurs fans, Chris Kavanagh is the referee on Saturday night, and Spurs have a 100% record when he takes charge of them. Sorry, Michelle. Michelle also spent a bit of time with Wolves last season. Let's look at their game with Leicester, who I'm very hot on this campaign. I like them a lot. I like Brendan Rodgers and what he's tried to do with his team. He had a relatively good impact towards the end of last season, got them to finish ninth. I think they'll finish higher up this season. Tell me how Wolves cope with a small squad, loads more games, and a second season in the Premier League where everybody knows what they are going to do.
Well, I think they've still got the quality, and they have brought in 8 players in this window. Patrick Cotrone, he looks like a big signing for them up top. And yeah, they defied all the expectations last season by finishing 7th and best of the rest. And I expect Leicester again to be right there with them. Like you say, I reckon Brendan Rodgers is going to do a great job there. But they've had a good pre-season. They won the Premier League Asia Trophy. I think they beat Newcastle 4-0. And then they beat Manchester City on penalties. Yes, it's only pre-season, but those are all good signs. They've brought in this 22-year-old Jesus Vallejo. Hopefully I'm saying that right. He's on loan from Real Madrid. Vallejo, so you can say it.
I've been practicing.
You know, he was massive for Spain in the European Under-21 this summer as well. So he's going to bring depth to their defence. So even though on paper their squad might look a bit thin, I still think they've got plenty of quality in there. And, you know, they've still got Ruben Neves, who was their player of the season, and Gian Martino. Yeah, they did used to play a lot on the counter-attack last season, and I do think teams might become more wise to that, so they might have to find a few other ways of playing, but I still fancy Wolves to do well this season.
Well, this is interesting because this is a battle of two teams really that want to be, and obviously Wolves are competing in the Europa League, and Leicester should be. I saw them in the Europa League, commentated on them last week. They were absolutely superb. Raul Jimenez, Diego Jota, Neves. I mean, they just wrote Moutinho. They roll off the tongue. I mean, they're absolutely class. They really are. And I think they're going to have a real stellar season. Those two should be competing, for the best of the rest.
Brendan Rodgers looks to have got Leicester tuned up, though, in pre-season. I just wonder how much that 6,370-mile round trip is going to affect Wolves, because they're going to Armenia before they go to Leicester City. I mean, not two destinations you usually sort of associate with one another. But Armenia is the home to the world's oldest winery. Did you know that?
I do now.
Leicester to leave them a bit groggy, do you think, on Sunday?
I don't know. I don't think they'll be punch drunk, but I think it's going to be a tight game, these two. And both of these sides have got really, you've got to remember, they're similar, got really ambitious owners, haven't they? Really ambitious, who want to be competing. They want to be playing Europa League football. They're not a Burnley who can't wait to get out of it. This is where they see themselves dining at that table. And I think it's going to be
a fascinating
game.
Maybe with a nice glass of wine.
Yeah.
Diego Jota has scored 4 goals in 5 games against Leicester, including a hat-trick in that thriller between the two last season. So he might be in for a good day. Cheers, Michelle.
Thank you very much, guys.
5 down, 5 to go.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Andrew Butler is the Sun's Dream Team editor. How are you doing? You all right?
Very well, thanks.
Thanks for coming to the studio. We appreciate it. You've been looking at some of the new signings and people that could make an impact in the Burnley-Southampton game this weekend for us.
Yeah, Burnley-Southampton. Well, the first thing you've got to say about Burnley-Southampton is it can't be as boring as the first game of last season. It was between the same teams, a 0-0 draw, and those games are not appropriate for August fixtures. You can still get to games in your shorts and your T-shirt. Leave the 0-0s till December or January. Anyway, the players that I really like the look of, Nathan Redmond. Now, I can't look at Nathan Redmond without seeing Pep Guardiola's face still looming over him from December 2017. But he won the Player of the Year award, scored 9 goals and 6 assists last season, and he looks like a reinvigorated character under Ralf Hasenhüttl as well. So I like the look of Nathan Redmond. As for Burnley, well, Burnley, they're still here, aren't they? I mean, they're still in the Premier League.
Yeah. You're not a fan? You're not a fan of Burnley?
Not particularly. I think it's fair to say that, you know,
Why is that? You don't think they're easy on the eye?
They're not easy.
They don't give you enough points in Dream Team? What is it?
Yeah, they're you know, few and far between for getting points on Dream Team. Leave the Burnley players at home. And I just feel like Burnley are a club that in 100 years' time, thanks to the advances in medical treatments, we'll always be sat here still in the studio and thinking, yep, Burnley are still in the Premier League and they're still going to finish 15th as well. Anyway, for me, Chris Wood probably is the man.
Good season last year, scored goals, crucial goals.
You know, he had a fine season in a fairly mediocre Burnley side. They obviously got a bit done over by the fact that they had to play Europa League early on in the season, but Chris Wood will probably do the business again for them this season.
Do you still think that he'll be the main striker with Jay Rodriguez re-signed?
Well, I mean, Jay Rodriguez, I think, is symptomatic of the sort of signing that Burnley wanted. Sean Dyche was after Jay Rodriguez for a long time, which tells you all that you want to know about Sean Dyche and a Dyche team. But maybe not.
You're so harsh on Burnley. You're really down on them.
They did finish in Europa League last season, but, you know, I think they're better than maybe the Dream Team. They're not quite a nightmare team. I'm not saying they're a Dream Team, but they're not quite a nightmare
team. Very nicely done. There's a pro for you right there.
But what I would say is one player I would definitely put in, and he started the last 19 Premier League games, he was absolutely outstanding, pivotal when their upturn, was Dwight McNeil. He is a terrific talent, plays out wide. It doesn't matter who's playing up top. He's in the team. He was superb, brilliant against Wolves. He was superb for England at the Toulon tournament. So he might be a little dark horse that I've added in as well.
Jay Rodriguez has played a lot of minutes in pre-season as well for Burnley. That's worth factoring in. So is Che Adams for Southampton. He looks like a lively signing as well, doesn't he? And they need someone like him, seeing as James Ward-Prowse was their joint top goal scorer last season.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Rodriguez, sorry, not Jay Rodriguez, Che Adams. They've got very similar names, Che and Jay. spelt entirely different.
Sounds like a great partnership.
He's a very exciting talent. He's an excellent signing for Southampton, I think. And he's only 23, but he's played over 160 league games already in his career. He's got a lot of minutes under the belt. He plays like an experienced striker. He partnered with Lukas Jukovic at Birmingham the last couple of years. Funnily enough, I went to school with Lukas Jukovic, and every time I watched Che Adams in the Championship last couple of years, I thought maybe it could have been me. I look at myself in the mirror again, I think it probably shouldn't have been me.
Can I ask what class you were in with Lukas?
It was maths.
Of course it is. And, that's how you went into Dream Team Metrics.
and Lucas was better at PE.
But maybe he looks at you and thinks it could have been me. You never know.
Perhaps.
Dream Team Editor. Yeah. Let's move on to Watford Brighton. Another Saturday afternoon kickoff. We're going to see more goals involving Brighton this season, aren't we? Because they've got a new manager who wants to play.
Yeah, Graham Potter's, I think, a really shrewd acquisition for Brighton. I think it'll be really interesting to see just what they do, because with Chris Hughton, you knew what you were getting with him. It was going to be, he's a very reliable manager.
It was Burnley-esque, though, the football, wasn't it?
It was a bit Burnley-esque, and that will be interesting to see if Graham Potter kind of brings in an attacking style of play, goes for it like he did with Östersunds and with Swansea, or if he plays it a bit safer. But they've signed Leandro Trossard from Genk. He got 17 goals last season. Looks like a decent signing, and yeah, we'll wait to see really what happens with Brighton.
They've got a plethora of centre halves, so I don't know who you'd put in there in terms of who's going to play. I'm sure there'll be one in, one out. But for me, they've signed the best player, best striker in the Championship in Neil Maupay.
Yeah. 25 goals last season, I think, there or thereabouts.
Yeah, 8 or 9 assists, and yeah. He missed. He could have easily added 10 or 12 on top of that if his finishing improves. And he's only 22. I think he's an amazing. So I think finally they might have got the front man that they've been wanting for so long, maybe to take over the mantle from Graham.
Yeah, he was brilliant. He was brilliant at Brentford, Maupay, and like you say, missed a few opportunities. But I think with those sort of strikers, you see it actually with a player like Aubameyang. He scores loads of goals. He does miss a few, but he gets in those opportunities all the time.
Talking of missing a few, Alireza Jahanbakhsh missed a few games last season, didn't he? Actually, he was on the team sheet and he was on the pitch, but he didn't really do much. He's been well trumpeted, though, because this is a guy who won the Golden Boot in the Eredivisie this season before last. However, they didn't make the most of him, or he didn't settle properly. Is he going to have a better season this time around?
Well, we wait and see. I mean, I'm very keen to start the where is Alireza Jahanbakhsh campaign, because will he play? Will he not? Will he be used in the right way? I think Hughton, I've seen some Brighton fans complain that Hughton didn't really use him in the proper way. He's an out and out winger, comes in and does his business that way, whereas Hughton wanted him to play sort of all around the pitch. He got 22 goals in the Eredivisie, like you said, Sam, and 14 assists. Phenomenal player for AZ Alkmaar. And then he comes to this country and just goes completely missing.
What is he good at? I can't work out what he's good at, because he's not fast. It doesn't seem like he can shoot. He can't head particularly well. He's got no set position. What's he good at?
Well, we don't know.
But what was he good at for AZ Alkmaar? Like, did he have a good... I mean, he scored goals, but how were those goals scored? I don't get anyone that Brighton has bought in the last 2 years. I don't understand who's making these purchases.
Well, I think David Proper did work out for them. I think he's been a good sign in midfield. But I agree, Jahanbakhsh, he normally plays off the wing, cuts inside, you know, a bit like I guess in Hollywood, Iron Robin-esque.
I think he has a little bit of speed, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, but he doesn't. To be honest, he didn't suit the way that Brighton played last season. Too defence minded in this 4-2-3-1. I'd like to see him play a bit more expansive, but look, they were no attacking threat at all last season, so I think Potter obviously needs to sort of create a little bit of magic down there.
And when you're talking about who's signing the players, Dan Ashworth is in now. He's the technical director, so from what now on, what happens is that he puts his stamp on that team, on that club, and on their philosophy going forward. I think they still might struggle this campaign, Brighton. Yeah. I don't know about you. I think they'll concede more goals than they did last year, because they won't be as tight at the back. They'll be a little bit more open. And I actually think that when it comes to it, they'll lose games against the bigger boys by a lot more than they did even last year. I thought Watford might struggle as well. I don't know what you think about that. They've signed Craig Dawson. That's their main summer signing. I mean, I'm not Snapchatting about it, are you?
No, I mean, I think they're linked with Decore leaving, which I think would be a huge blow. I think they need to keep
Everton
hold of him.
Ended their interest though.
Yeah, well, I think for Watford fans, they'll be delighted with that because he's arguably their standout player. And they've got loads of creative talent. I don't think they'll struggle. I think they'll be competing in and around the top 10, which I think is really good for them.
Have they got better than last year though? There's no improvement there. You mentioned Craig Dawson. No one else is particularly exciting of those players. Half that squad are always injured. Pereira is always injured. I think he's a quality player, but he's at Watford because he only plays 15 games a year. You're again relying on Troy Deeney from set pieces. Another yep. season of that.
No, but I think, look, they've stumbled upon, I think stumbled is the right word, the right manager. It seems a very happy club, a happy team, and for a long time that hasn't been the case. All the players seem like they really care. They really want to fight for that football club. So I think they'll be comfortable in and around mid-table. Top 10, I think it'd be terrific for them.
I think the most telling thing about Watford this season, Javi Gracia is the first manager who's stayed on throughout the summer since 2014.
Look at that. Well done, Javi.
And since Gianfranco Zola, they haven't had a manager who's
unemployed
been there for
by
two
January.
Years in a row. Right, he might be, but I think that's the thing. Consistency is the key. And you see that time and time again in the Premier League. They might not have improved as such by only making one signing, but they've got a team there that made the FA Cup final last year. So
and embarrassed themselves at Wembley.
Quite, and that is the one thing that a lot of people remember from
sorry,
this
Watford
season.
Sorry, Watford fans, but
they'll hold on to Decore. Deeney, you know, is still a great player. De La Feo showed signs of what he actually can do if he gets a run of games as well. I think they'll be fine.
They will.
You sure?
Yep.
Okay. Well, Watford fans certainly will be happy about the fact that they went to Wembley last year. They enjoyed their day out, even if they got absolutely hammered. Andrew, thank you very much.
Pleasure. Thank you very much.
This is a Game Day podcast from TalkSport.
Three more matches to go. Let's start with Newcastle against Arsenal on Sunday. New manager, new signings. There was a social media campaign encouraging this match to be abandoned by supporters in pre-season at St James Park. But since then, they've spent £40 million on Joel Linton, who scored on his first start for them against Hibs. And they've bought in one or two others as well. Jethro Williams, the left-back, has come in. Maximim on the wing. They've kept hold of Almiron. David, what's going to happen here? Because Arsenal have also spent money, haven't they? But in the wrong areas.
Well, look, for Newcastle, on Tyneside, the tide has turned slightly. I mean, it seems like a happy place now. Steve Bruce is...
Oh, that might be over-egging it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the players
are
certainly...
We love Mike Ashley. We do. Come on.
Maybe not him, but...
Join in, Geordies.
Yeah, the players certainly seem happy. I mean, it seems, you know, they've gone from maybe a manager who's a little bit distant and aloof to someone who's very open. He's got the banter, the personality, his open-door policy. The players seem really happy, and that's so important. Look, the results pre-season been decent. He's playing with two strikers, which is an upturn, and I think actually if they get going and get firing, and as you say, Joe Linton, if he is this new number nine and delivers with a front two or more attacking front foot football, I don't know, I think the fans will be happy. So this 3-5-2, whether we'll see that, key to Newcastle, the key is their midfield. I mean, last season Man City struggled to break him down. Certainly their defensive midfielders, Isaac Hayden, Sean Longstaff, looks like Jonjo Shelvey as well will be in there. That midfield three, formidable. Doesn't matter what formation they played, that three are going to be key for Newcastle. They kept Longstaff up against an Arsenal side who, I don't know, I think they've got a couple of issues, certainly at the back. This is going to be a really entertaining game. And do you know what? I fancy that Newcastle might surprise a few this season, starting with this game.
A couple of issues at the back. I mean, they're going to still play Monreal, who's 33. They're going to play, well, they haven't got Hector Bellerin at the moment because he's still injured. They're going to play Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who scored an own goal the other day against Barcelona. The two centre-halves are going to be Socrates Papastadopoulos and Skodran Mustafi.
Oh. Or Callum Chambers.
Or Callum Chambers.
Fulham's auxiliary midfielder.
Rob Holding will probably be that second central defender when he's fit, but he's not going to be fit for the opening weekend. They will get a little bit of protection, won't they? Because they've got that new signing from Real Madrid who's called...
Mi nombre es Dani Ceballo, pero vosotros me podéis llamar Dani.
Oh, we can just call him Danny,
Danny's
I think he
fine.
Said.
We can do that.
Dani Ceballo.
Who's coming from Real Madrid. And Pepe as well. But he's training on his own and isn't fully fit for the first weekend of the season.
Yeah, meant to be one of the quickest players you're ever going to see. One player I wonder who probably won't be travelling will be Mesut Ozil. Is he going to play? Will he play away from? Will he go all the way to Newcastle? Now, I don't know if you saw his pass to Aubameyang against Barcelona.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful pass. Lovely touch control swivel. What a finish from Aubameyang. But basically, he never plays up north. He did last season. I think he scored in a 2-1. But other than that, I think that's his only start up north in Newcastle since he signed in 2013. Will he play? Yeah, what are they going to do? Is he going to play because they've got no one else, really? As you say, they've got holes, they've got issues all over the park. Wouldn't surprise me if Newcastle really upturned the books here and got a positive result and even nicked a win.
I think he'll be playing up north rather soon, actually, but probably North America more than anywhere else. Fifth in the Europa League final was the return last year. Can you see them doing any better than that this year?
I think there's low-hanging fruit to be grabbed in the Premier League by the likes of Everton, Leicester, Wolves, and Arsenal are certainly that. Going forward, they're going to be phenomenal. I've seen Pepe a couple of times, and he is incredibly fast, nimble feet. He'll score goals. I think he'll be a centre-forward as well in a few years' time. We know about Aubameyang. We know about Lacazette, potentially injured for this weekend, but he will score goals this campaign. Defence, a massive issue. They're going to concede over 50 goals. I can see them being picked for top six. Never mind top four for them.
Okay, they finished with 51 goals against in the last two seasons. 35 of those last campaign came away from home. One clean sheet on their travels. That was against a Watford team that were down to 10 men after Troy Deeney had got sent off. So Newcastle are going to score, right?
Yeah, they're going to score. And I guess the problem for Arsenal and Arsenal fans is the paucity of options. There's none there. Koscielny's gone, obviously ripped one shot off. He's now got another one on. What are they going to do at the back? It's a real struggle. And I think if Newcastle play on the front foot, really aggressive, get the ball into the box, make them defend, then I think they're going to have real joy here.
Let's not take the mick out of people who've got new jobs or new projects this season, because there's a few of us that are doing that. Right, let's move on to Bournemouth against Sheffield United. In the last 10 seasons, 11 of the promoted teams have been relegated straight back to the Championship. But in Chris Wilder, Sheffield United have got an innovative manager. I think they can get off to a really good start against Bournemouth at the weekend, because their team have got injuries, Lewis Cook chief amongst those. Lloyd Kelly, I don't know if he's going to be ready for the weekend either. There's a doubt about him. But admittedly, they do have one of the best players in the Championship from last season in Harry Wilson. Let's hope he's fit.
What a signing. I think that is absolute fantastic. I'm surprised he's not figuring for Liverpool this season. Harry Wilson, tremendous. I think Sheffield United, I'm really looking forward to them in the Premier League, because they showed real tactical nous on the Wilder in the Championship.
So tell me, are we going to see the overlapping Sheffield United centre-backs making an appearance?
I think we will, certainly against Bournemouth. I think they'll show respect to them, but they're going to go for it. He's got a British core. That's what his model, his template is Burnley, I think. That's what he's looking at, Chrissy Wilder. Wouldn't surprise me if they compete. I think they are going to find it hard, but I think what he's done with the signings, he's got players that can compete at that level. If they do drop down, they'll bounce straight back up.
Tom, who are you going to obliterate in this game?
Before we do that, I do just want to mention Ravel Morrison. I've got to mention him really, really briefly. Signed for Sheffield United. I absolutely love this guy. What a talented footballer he is. When he's got, you know, the fake teeth in, he's got the big smile and the wonderful skills. I love this guy, and I think he could be a real hit for Sheffield United this year. And I fancy them to stay up. I'm saying it right now.
Okay, what about the game?
I think the game delivers. Bournemouth will attack, Sheffield United will attack, and I quite fancy Sheffield United to pull off that first day of the season shock, the Huddersfield at Crystal Palace kind of shock. I like the look of them, I like their players, I like their manager. I think they're going to do well.
I worry about Bournemouth, you know. This season is number 7 for Eddie Howe at Dean Court. And they started well last season, didn't they? And if they hadn't started well, they would have been in serious trouble, because they'd have absolutely terrible blip from midwinter onwards. They let in 70 goals last year. 70, that's a huge number. A big stat of the weekend for me is that Sheffield United are Bournemouth's bogey team. Did you know this? They have won, Sheffield United, 10 of the last 11 games against Bournemouth.
And I definitely didn't read that beforehand. I just fancied the Blades before, inherently. I didn't read the pack.
Stick them in your accumulator.
They've got some tremendous... I mean, you forget about the likes of Ryan Fraser. He is a tremendous winger. They managed to keep hold of him. He might not be happy, but he's still there.
He's going to leave next year on a free transfer.
But he's still... If I was the likes of Arsenal or somebody like that, I'd have been signing him. Yeah. But the fact Bournemouth has still got him, I mean, that's a sort of quality Sheffield United don't really possess.
Crystal Palace traditionally start very slowly, and Everton look up for the charge, Tom.
Yeah, I really fancy this game this weekend. Crystal Palace up against Everton. With Palace, we record the programme before the transfer window closes. Their season is as simple as this. If Wilfried Zaha is still there and he plays this weekend, they'll do well and they will survive this season. If Wilfried Zaha is gone by the time the transfer window closes, I think they'll struggle all campaign long. There's nothing else in that squad that particularly excites me. Defensively, they can look good when Sacco and Tompkins are together, but they are never together, and James Tompkins out again this weekend, so I wouldn't fancy them. Depending on the Zaha situation for Everton, I love the look of some of the players they've brought in. And everyone I've spoken to, Italian football journalists, everyone has said Moise Kean. Moise Kean, let's get it right.
Il mio nome è Moise Kean.
Moise Kean.
I'll get it right. Kean. I like Kean up front for Everton. Big fan of it.
David Moyes, Roy Kean.
Il mio nome è Moise Kean.
It's all there, isn't
it? Two Manchester United legends.
I'm sure the fans will love that one. So I like the look of him. I think that he is going to be converted into a central forward role. He'll kind of rotate that with Dominic Calvert-Lewin, a player I think has got a big season ahead of him. I like him a lot. So I quite fancy Everton for this game, and I fancy them for a good season personally.
Okay, I like the idea of them signing Moyes Keane. They added goals, which is really important because towards the end of last season, they started to keep clean sheets. And even in pre-season, they've been doing that but not scoring enough. I like Dominic Calvert-Lewin as well. He gives them a focal point. I think he's a good player, but it will take the pressure off him in terms of goal scoring. They've got some good wing players. Richarlison's a fantastic player. Walcott, they've still got on the books. I know that he is not everybody's cup of tea, but they've got Gylfi Sigurdsson, Bernard.
Yep.
They've got a very good squad. And Fabian Delph, I know he's not going to be available for the first week of the season or even a couple of them, but he's going to be a massive influence in that dressing room as well, and they're going to need that. The one issue is centre-backs.
Absolutely. But look, I think Kurt Zouma is a real blow for them. But remember, they signed Gomez too. They've got real accomplished players in the middle of the park. I know that Idrissa Gueye's gone, which I think is a real blow. I mean, yep, no one else plays that sort of way for Everton. I know he might not be the one to make the big raking passes, but he can certainly break things up. And I think they're going to have a good season. Moise Kean, I agree, if that is his surname. We can play his surname again.
You just said it wrong again.
My name is Moise Kean.
Moise Kean. Like, Moise, you know, Kean. The two Manchester United.
David Moyes, Roy Kean. Legends.
Yeah. Oh, they, yeah.
Red Devils legends.
I think he's going to be a great signing. I think he's going to do terrific.
In midfield as well, he can't play this weekend, I don't think, but Jean-Philippe Gbamin from Mainz they brought in this summer to replace Idrissa Gueye, who was a fantastic talent gone to PSG. It's all on him. If they're going to make the top six this year, maybe higher for Everton, it's how good he actually is. Seen him a few times in Germany. I'm not sure he's at that kind of level, but we shall see.
I mean, Marcel Brands is having his stamp on this team, isn't he? Because after a few of their signings, you'd have to question them. Certainly,
he's the sporting director.
Yeah. Luca Digne, for example, that was one of the first ones. You go, you know what? Brilliant signing.
Yeah.
And they've kept him as well.
Yep. What about Crystal Palace? I'm a bit fearful about Roy Hodgson and his team. They haven't invested in the right areas. They've lost Wan-Bissaka. Even if they have kept Wilfried Zaha, I don't think he's going to be particularly happy about being there. And everyone's talking about the introduction of VAR and how it's going to mean that Luka Milivojevic ends up as the top goal scorer because there'll just be penalties galore. But I don't think that's actually going to happen. If you look at the stats from Italy and from Spain where they've had over a season of VAR now, then, you know, you've got a situation where actually no penalties increase.
I think, look, I know everyone's going to have their worries about Palace, but if you look at their last six results, they won four out of them in the Premier League. So they'll be going into this season trying to think back to that, thinking, right, remember those results? They won away brilliantly. Do you remember at Arsenal? They had a few other cracking results. Mm. I think they will find it tough, certainly against Everton. And I'm fearful for them because I don't really think they have the squad depth.
Okay, well, Wilfried Zaha submitted a transfer request on Thursday. Whether or not that was honoured, we shall find out. A couple of other breaking news bits before we leave that we should probably talk about. Coutinho didn't go to Spurs. He turned down the opportunity of a loan move, which obviously is going to be something that's going to disappoint Maurizio Pochettino. But Watford did sign Danny Welbeck.
Oh.
So well done to Danny Welbeck, because we were asking a little bit earlier on whether we thought that Watford had enough going forward. Maybe Danny Welbeck will be the man that ensures they don't have any problems at all.
I'm so pleased that's happened, because I felt the inevitability of Danny Welbeck signing for West Ham for the last 5 or 6 years. So I'm pleased for him. I'm pleased for Watford. And just like Javi Grazia, it'll be out by Christmas.
Gents, thank you very much. That's the first edition of the Game Day Preview Pod. Remember, Game Day, 11 o'clock this Saturday on TalkSport with live commentary from West Ham against Manchester City at 12:30. Crystal Palace, Everton is on TalkSport 2 at 3 o'clock and Tottenham against Villa at 5:30. You can rate and review this podcast and subscribe as well via your podcast provider. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you very shortly.
That was a Game Day Premier League preview show, a TalkSport exclusive podcast.
Il mio nome è Moise Kean.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen,
premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.